Welcome to the Running Explained podcast. I'm your host, Elizabeth. I'm a marathoner, coach, and answer seeker. When I first started running at the age of 29, I had so many questions and what felt like nowhere to turn to for answers. And now I'm here to answer all your running questions about anything that you might want to know. If you're a new runner or even doing this for a long time, there's always something more to learn about running. So let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. I'm super excited for this week's episode. My guest is Stevie Lynn Smith, returning guest. She's a sports dietitian and was on the show last year talking about how to train for back-to-back marathons or back-to-back Ironmans or back-to-back races and what you can do to recover in between those two hard efforts. But this week, she is back to talk about sports nutrition marketing. You are being marketed to every second of every day, pretty much. And every company is trying to sell you something with their specific hook. Some sports nutrition companies are going to use, you know, popular figures to advertise their product. Some companies are going to use a specific ingredient or claim to advertise their product. Here's the thing. I actually am a fan of some products that have very questionable, in my mind, marketing. This isn't to say products are good or bad, but merely to examine the claims that are being made when those products are being marketed to you. And Stevie is here to help us kind of discuss what it is that we're seeing when we look at some of these claims, how to critically evaluate the claims that different companies are making, and what you should be looking for when you are choosing sports nutrition products that work for you specifically. So if you have questions about products that claim to be sugar-free and yet still advertised towards endurance athletes, if you have questions about how electrolytes can be marketed towards improving your energy without the crash, those are all things that we are talking about today. Stevie Lynn Smith, welcome back to the show. Really excited to have you here again.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me back on.
So please reintroduce yourself for those of our listeners who are unaware of who you are and how awesome you are. You were a guest back on the show last season, but this is your season three appearance. So what's up?
Yeah. So for those who don't know me, I'm Stevie Lynn Smith. I'm a registered dietitian. I'm board certified in sports nutrition. I've been practicing, 11 years now. So in my 11th year of practice, I feel like I graduated yesterday. I have my bachelor's of science in dietetics and nutrition from SUNY Buffalo State, and my master's in applied nutrition with a sports and fitness concentration from Northeastern University. I have my own private practice, very uniquely named Stevie Lynn Nutrition. We kept it real easy peasy there. And besides kind of the boring stuff, right? Just kidding. We love science. We love learning. I am also an endurance athlete. I've done 10 full Ironmans, 10 kilometer open water swims, lots of marathons, a 50 miler, many half Ironmans. Basically, I had a lot of friends who said, who wants to do this race? Sure, I'll do it. So you name it, I've probably done it. So I've been doing, I did my first marathon in 2009, first Ironman in 2012, so have also been in the endurance sports game for a while, and I got a really cute dog.
The most important part.
Can never leave
him
out.
Dog mom.
Very important. He manages. He's managing right behind me right now.
So last time you were on the show, we talked about running back-to-back marathons, right? Running two, or not even marathons, but two large endurance events relatively close together, and getting your perspective as a dietitian. Something that you specifically did was you worked with Shalane Flanagan when she ran, was it six marathons?
Yes.
Within how many months back a couple years ago?
It was 6 weeks. Yes.
Yeah.
We were coming off COVID and all of the major marathons were all rescheduled. Yeah. So all the travel too.
All the travel. And so you have a wealth of knowledge, not only personally, professionally as a dietitian, but working with athletes of the highest caliber in this performance space. Yes. And today we're going to tackle a topic that I think we definitely haven't really talked about in the show explicitly. We're talking about sports marketing in the nutrition space. And how you as an athlete can be an informed consumer of products, how you can learn to cut through BS, how you can learn to identify when you are being marketed to in a pseudoscience-y way, and how you can fill up your educational cup to help make the best nutrition and fueling decisions, and probably hopefully the most cost-effective decisions too. What don't you need to buy to help fuel your training? as a dietitian and as an endurance athlete yourself, tell me about some of the trends you've noticed in sports nutrition marketing over the recent past and things that you have noticed changing in the past decade.
Yeah, and I sometimes reflect upon this because when I did my first marathon Ironman, that 2009 to 2012, there weren't many options when it came to sports nutrition, right? It was kind of like, okay, there's power bar perform sports drink on the course, and this is my only option, so this is what I'm going to train with. And I think there was only like 3 gel options out there. None of the bars that we see, like none of like Honey Stinger waffles, an example, or Goo waffles, none of the alternatives. Not many chews. I think actually I used sport beans because there was like not Cliff Blocks, nothing like that. So, which being young, it was kind of like, I think it was good for me because it was like, okay, I know I have to fuel, right? So I was in dietitian school, as I call it, when I started endurance sports. And I was like, okay, I know this is important. You know, I didn't necessarily learn sports nutrition, but, you know, put 2 and 2 together, figured it out. And then you just didn't have a lot of choices. So you just learned how to do it. Like, we don't love it. It's what I call business feeding or business fueling. It's not out of enjoyment. It's out of necessity because we enjoy participating in these sports and races. So I think on one hand, it was positive in that light, but also now in current times over the years, having a lot of products from sports drinks, rehydration beverages, recovery beverages and options, and even just when you get a little bit more nitty gritty, different gels and chews and semi-solid options, it's really, really nice. It's a luxury, actually, I think. Because then, especially like with long races, of course, you can read all these great sports dietitians infographics on the internet as to how you fuel your races. But there is also kind of that personal preference where whether you work with a dietitian one-on-one or you figure it out on your own, I always like to take an account, especially when we're thinking ultra races, Ironman, ultra marathons, things like texture fatigue and flavor fatigue, having different kind of tools in the toolbox. So when you're at mile 18 in an Ironman marathon or even a regular marathon, you're like, I literally can't stomach another gel. Oh, but I know I like these chews and I've trained with these chews and I know I need to get some more carbs and sodium in. So I'm going to have my chews and set. So having these products gives the athletes a lot of different tools in their toolkit. But then, as you mentioned, there's so much overwhelm. There's so many to choose from. And how do you know which to choose, right?
I'll throw back even further. So my father is an endurance cyclist and he trained and raced pretty seriously in the 90s. And so as a young child, like I remember going to the bike shop with him and they had this like one sad, lonely rack of Goo. This is like 1995, right? And like, and I swam competitively growing up. So like for me, power bars were like always in my swim bag. These like tar textured, like the bricks of like, you know. And so when I was growing up, it was sport fuel was like this, you know, these like set, like it was kind of exotic and fun to be like, ooh, these are special nutritional things that we use when we're exercising. But that was kind of it. It was like Gatorade, Goo, and power bars. Yes. And I still have vivid memories of me like eating, like, you know, being like half wet, sitting on a, you know, gym bleachers at like this at the pool and like eating a nasty old power bar between my events. Thank God things have changed. But with great choice comes great complexity because the marketing, right? When you have so many companies competing for your dollars, they're going to start to make some claims in some cases that are, how do we... preying on your fears and your weaknesses as an athlete. So what are some things that you see in marketing, right, that are red flags for a consumer?
Yes. And I'm going to 100% just kind of throw a little disclaimer here. This is thinking to the average runner, triathlete, cyclist, endurance athlete. There are so many nuances when it comes to sports nutrition. This isn't someone dealing with certain medical conditions or anything very specific, but just generally the endurance and even active population, because I like to say active individuals, because if you're working out, cycling, running 5 days a week, even if you don't have a finish line, you're an athlete. But we have a lot of minds at work to identify, but you're also included in this bunch. So some of my big red flags, keto, low sugar, no sugar, avoid the sugar crash. Looking at, low glycemic, clean. There's no dirt in your gel. There's no dirt in there.
I hope not. No bugs. Bug free.
Bug free, right? I hope there's no dirt in the gel that they make. Those are some of the biggest kind of buzzwords that I see, or I think I already said I said gluten free, low carb, low sugar, anything that's kind of making these purported health claims that this is a healthy product for you. This is something that's going to be all real food ingredients, all natural. Those are some of the really, really big, big ones that tend to be a product that is, like you said, preying on your fear, thinking, you know, you need to absolutely have the air quotes cleanest source of energy. That's not actually true, right? And it makes people afraid of all of these great sports nutrition products that we talked about that are literally designed to be used by your body metabolically, physiologically, how your body prefers to use fuel. Like, it is designed so your body, you can ingest it and your body is going to use it for that energy you need quickly at mile 16 in your marathon. So it's going to work exactly like you want it to. And they're going to have the carbohydrates concentrations and kind of some of those ratios, sodium, carbs, what type of carbohydrates, designed specifically so your body uses it efficiently. Like, these are like an alley-oop just to make it real easy for us to succeed out there.
I think it's interesting when I see sports marketing products, and I think we're talking about kind of the all of the products that are encompassed under the marketed towards, as you said, active individuals, mm-hmm. right? And obviously, this being the Running Explained podcast, we're geared primarily towards endurance runners, although you may also be a triathlete, cyclist, whatever it is. But so we're talking about things that are marketed towards you or designed for in run, right, intra run or intra workout fueling products you will take during your run that are supposed to give you, so carbohydrate based products also can encompass things like electrolyte based products. So things that are intended to, you know, give you sources of electrolytes with or without carbohydrates. And then there are, we'll also talk kind of about kind of what I call like the periphery of products, those things that are marketed towards you as like pre-workout supplements or those types of things that technically would fall under, I think, the sports nutrition category, even though they're not technically food or fuel. One of the big things for me that pisses me off to no end is when I see a product marketed towards endurance athletes that promises sustained energy without the sugar crash or the sugar high or the something or other. So the product is offering me sustained energy, right, without the sugar. And it's funny when you think about that and say, How are you providing me energy without sugar? Because mm-hmm. unfairly, I think, sugar has gotten a really bad rap. And it's very, very trendy these days to blame everything on sugar, just like back in the 90s, blame everything on fat. I think it's important to remember that marketing is based on cultural trends as well, and think it's very trendy right now to market things as low sugar or low carb or low glycemic index, right? Limiting the amount of sugar. But as you said, when we are exercising, when we are training, when we are running, our body's preferred source of fuel is sugar. Whether it comes from a carrot or a goo, it's sugar and we mm-hmm. need it, right?
Yes.
And so we shouldn't be afraid of this. And we shouldn't be I think it's important to look critically at claims from sports nutrition companies marketing those types of things to us and ask ourselves, what are they actually trying to sell me?
100%. And I mean, you nailed it right there, right? So when we're thinking, especially because, like you said, this whole, without the sugar crash, low carb, low sugar, again, carbohydrates are going to be broken down to sugar eventually, whether you're looking at from like something that's slowly oxidized. Basically, slow oxidation just means it's going to take longer for your body to break it down to glucose. If it's usually I see in these products that are saying like avoid the energy crash, they're using some sort of starch. They usually have it as their own TM. That's sometimes, I'm not saying all the time, but sometimes to me, that's something when I see it on the label. If they have it trademarked as their own kind of super starch or something of the like, that could be a little like, oh, let me dig deeper here. That's where my brain goes. So basically, it's going to start there. So that would be something we would call a polysaccharide. It'll get broken down to a disaccharide and then eventually broken down to a monosaccharide, such as glucose. The other monosaccharides are fructose and galactose. So monosaccharides, glucose, fructose, galactose. So eventually, you are going to get that super starch, that slow burn carbohydrate is going to be broken down to that same simple carbohydrate. But despite what the marketing claims say, there is a lot of research showing that these slowly oxidized or broken down carbohydrates potentially lead to more GI issues because it's going to stay in your system longer. When I'm thinking about intra-workout fuel, and even if we're grabbing pre-workout fuel right before you head out the door to run, I'm always telling people simple, easy to digest carbohydrates. The point of those intra, and even just like in the 10 minutes before, is you want your body to break them down quickly so they don't stay in that GI tract and cause stomach issues. We've all had that time. I've even had that time. I think I had like a handful of almonds an hour before I ran one day. I know better, but I was just, living life. And I got out there and I was like, oh, I know better. Mistakes were made. So when we're, heading back to the actual point of this, is that when they're marketing no sugar crash, it's also going against what we know physiologically for how our body is going to respond during exercise. So during exercise, your blood sugar shouldn't be perfectly stable. That's all right. Insulin is going to be suppressed during activity, but the body has this ability to support this, right? The goal during exercise is to make sure our blood sugar isn't going too low, which is why you see most sports dietitians saying, all right, you're in a runner. All right, let's aim to eat every 30, 35-ish minutes, give or take on the athlete. So we're keeping that blood sugar stable. So all of these claims that they come up with, not really sure. Your body wants that quick access, that quick energy from glucose. And adding in, when we're thinking about the super starch, you have two more steps to break it down to get to that glucose. So it's going to take longer for your body to get the energy it wants and needs.
I also think it's very interesting. And back to the whole like the marketing thing though. You are being in the world we live in, we are being marketed to every second of our lives. I think we all know at this point are, we as consumers are commodities for big, big businesses, right? They see us as people who will buy their products. And I think for a lot of companies to feel like they have to stand out in a increasingly crowded sphere, everybody has to have kind of a gimmick or a hook or a thing or a niche, right? And so if a new product comes out and says, "Oh, but I'm not like those other products. I'm a cool product because I don't have this," right? It's okay. And this is not how you sell products. If I took like five things that I liked, I have a canister of, I have actually a crystal vase full of gels behind me right now. It's has like, I have like five different products in there. I like them all, right? But if I were the head of marketing for one of those companies, it's my job to get my product to stand out and to sell you my product over somebody else's product, right? So how do I do that? I have to come up with a way to differentiate what my product does that is what I think better than what somebody else's product does. And so there are going to be some people who are looking at products like, and I'll, Never Second Energy Gel, right? 30 grams of carbohydrate per gel. For some people, that is the marketing hook. You want to get, I only have to, one gel has 30 grams of carbs? Sign me up. Oh my God, yes. But there are other people who are looking at different claims or different marketing tools, like that low sugar claim or the, you know, low glycemic index claim or the gluten-free claim, right? And you're not a celiac, you don't have celiac disease, right? Mm-hmm. That is something that appeals to them. The problem is that not all marketing hooks are equal.
Yes.
And I think that's a real challenge, because when you have consumers who are looking to these, what ostensibly these sports nutrition companies, and saying, naively, right? I think we all want to believe the best in people, but you know, we have to be realistic, and saying, well, why would they make that claim if it were harmful for me? Why would they make that claim if it wasn't something that was going to be helpful for me? And I'm not here to dissect why certain companies choose to market their products the way that they do, but I think it's really important to remember that you as the consumer need to be very careful about who you choose to give your money to.
Yes, 100%. Because like you said, they're just preying on what you think you should care about. And as I tell a lot of my one-on-one nutrition clients, sometimes when we have some big unlocks or they realize something and like, wow, I never knew that about sports nutrition or nutrition in general. And this is where I like to remind everybody that you didn't grow up learning about nutrition. There was no nutrition education, at least, I mean, I don't know if there is for younger generations now, but you're not an expert in this. You aren't trained to critically think about these things. But when it comes to anything in nutrition, especially sports nutrition, sometimes I like people to zoom out and remember that nutrition is simple, but it's also complicated. But if anything seems really gimmicky or like a fad, if it seems too good to be true, or like making, like you said, some of these very large claims, kind of flashy claims of like no blood sugar crash, that's where you learn to be skeptical, right? I always think about like the used car salesman kind of thought of it. They're going to try and sell you something because they want to make money. And they're going to go at kind of like all costs. And really, sports nutrition at the end of the day, it's not that glamorous. But all of these companies like to try, at least not all of them. I shouldn't encapsulate everybody in this. But many of them try to make it look really glamorous so you feel like, oh, well, I'm taking this. And, you know, there's X, Y, or Z professional athlete who is taking these gels. So, like, I want to perform like them. Let me take those gels.
We have to remember that professional athletes make their living being sponsored by companies, right? That outside of a select few of extraordinarily high paid athletes, right? There are a lot of really talented athletes out there who are having to take multiple product deals because that's how they are paying their mortgage or paying their rent or paying for their life, just surviving. I was thinking about this because there are, you know, a couple big players, I think, in sports nutrition who's marketing who right now. But I wanted to ask about Martin gels. Very famously, Eliud Kipchoge also uses Martin gels. That was a huge get for them. Do you think that product would be as popular as it is today if Kipchoge wasn't their like primary spokesman?
That's a great question. I think probably, because if they didn't get him, they would get it elsewhere. And they have seemed to work their way into very high profile races, such as the Boston Marathon.
Boston.
And automatically that's already pigeonholing those athletes into, oh, if I want to use course support, this is what's on course. So I've learned by this point, I should train and try what's going to be on course. So yes and no, I think that was huge for it. And It's one of those ones where I seem to get mixed reviews on it. I don't like it. It's not for me. It ain't it. But some athletes love it. Others don't. And then I'm not opposed to some of my athletes using it. Even sometimes when there's flashier claims about clean energy and all natural, if those products fit my athlete's carbohydrate needs, their sodium needs, it helps them get to that 60 to 90 grams of carb per hour we're aiming for, wherever they fall kind of in that goal range, then I'm okay with it. You know, one of my beefs with Morton is that they don't have a lot of salt in them, and I got a lot of salty sweaters.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You know? Yeah, that is actually my one big issue, because people are looking, I think, here's the other thing. People tend to look at a product like Martin, right? This kind of like really, I mean, there's a lot of cachet around the brand, right? They have Eliud Kipchoge, but the marketing, it looks cool. Like, it's sleek packaging. It's also very expensive, right? That is one of the more expensive gels I've ever bought, and I keep buying it because I genuinely do like it. But it's not a complete sports nutrition package because it is very low in sodium. I don't know a single runner who can get by with, it's like 35 milligrams of sodium per gel, 3 per hour to 75 milligrams of carbs. You're not even breaking 100 grams of milligrams of sodium. Like, you know, so I think people think, oh, but if Kipchoge uses it, it must have everything that I need, when we just need to read the label and say, not enough sodium.
Not enough sodium. And like, it's a product that works well for people, but you'll still see on the website, natural ingredients, no preservatives, no artificial flavors or allergens. It won't get much cleaner than this. I literally just read that off their website. So it's just like, I hate that marketing, because it also creates this, which could be a whole nother conversation, this elitist kind of air in the sport. And I know that's a big thing in a lot of endurance sports. And it's not the sports nutrition's company to make it, you know, a more inclusive environment. But I think it kind of creates that elitism, but also in a sport where we know there's so much disordered eating, thoughts, behaviors, patterns, do we really need to say these things, right? There's preservatives are designed for a reason. There's preservatives in foods for a reason. And just because it's a preservative doesn't mean that it's not like a naturally occurring compound either. So like, yeah, no allergens. Okay, that could be helpful information for people who have allergies. Great. Right.
Peanut free, probably a good thing.
Yes.
But there's a limit.
But it's just also that this information is given in such a way, kind of like that tone, that air about it, that it's just like, all right. Let's just, like, at the end of the day, too, like, artificial flavors, is this really where we're going to be, like, is that going to make or break you in your gels?
That's right? So funny. I wasn't even aware if that's how they were doing their marketing. Like, it's so funny what you, because there are some companies who market in a specific way that, like, sticks with me, probably because I don't like the way they market them. But, yeah, that idea that we're marketed these products as being clean, like, don't you want to be clean? Don't you want to be, you know, the best you can be? And artificial dyes have no place. It's the implicit, right? There's a lot of things that are explicit and a lot of things that are implicit, right? This is our product and it's superior because of these qualities. Therefore, we're implying that products that don't have these qualities are inferior. And if you use that inferior product, you're going to get inferior results, or you've made the wrong decision.
Exactly. That's what I just am like, like, if this works great, like, it's just, I wish it could just be a more supportive environment. And then more people come in and they question themselves. They're like, okay, but like, I can't eat anything processed because I'm a runner and I want to be the best and I need to look like these models on this gel's website or this professional athlete who's running this way if I want to be my best, which is absolutely not true. And that's not to blame professional athletes, because they're doing their job. They have to do what they do. And, you know, I'm not saying that they're implying that, but that's how sometimes these things are read, especially when there's that partnership of sports nutrition products and professional athletes. My biggest pet peeve with sports nutrition products and professional athletes is when the sports nutrition products have the professional athletes speak to the sports nutrition and they are not qualified to do so. That is my biggest pet peeve. I was like, why? Could you not get a dietitian to stand behind your product, or it hurts me.
There is nothing more powerful than a celebrity endorsement for a product, right?
Yeah.
You get a big person, and we said for Martin, right? They got Kipchoge, right? I mean, would they have been as popular? Maybe not, but the reason I know about them is because they had his face all over their marketing, you know, starting a couple of years ago. And I was like, oh my God, what is this brand, right? I have to check it out. Kipchoge uses it. It must be the best because he's the best. So when we look at these professional athletes who are signed to endorsement deals with other sports nutrition companies, right? What do we think? Oh, this person is fast and they use this product. Therefore, this product is helping make them fast, right?
Yep.
And
100%.
There are a lot of things that go on behind the scenes in the way that those deals are struck between the company and the athlete, in terms of how often the athlete will be promoting the product, what language they are being told to use, if they are given specific talking points, if they are being told to post or speak to their product at a certain frequency, if they're supposed to be wearing gear or other things like visible with the brand marketing. Like, you have to remember that your favorite professional athlete might say that they use XYZ product, and sure, they might use that in part of their training, but they also might be using other stuff that they're simply just not talking about.
Yes, 100%. 100%. And honestly, this is one of the things, like, ethically as a dietitian, I've got a Scratch Labs discount code, but who doesn't? And that's what I use now that I've retired from Ironman and don't have to use Gatorade Endurance. But to me, it's very important to me that I kind of stay this unbiased, unattached, to like not sign into any deal where I've got to post about a certain company a couple times a month. Scratch Labs works for a lot of my athletes. And I'm like, great, if this works for you, you like the taste, you like the flavor, here you go. Here's a discount code. Boom. But otherwise, beyond that, I try very hard to be that unbiased, open-minded. There's a few non-negotiables when it comes to sports nutrition products that I tell my clients, but otherwise, the way I see it, my job, especially in the one-on-one situation, is ethically to look. My number one goal always is health, right? Always going to be health, keeping you safe, keeping you healthy. But then also, you are grown adults. You are allowed to have preferences. You are allowed to like different fruits and different vegetables, but also it comes to sports nutrition products. So then it's my job to be like, all right, Elizabeth, we have trialed these sports nutrition products. These are the ones that work for you. Let's come up with a fueling plan that is going to help you hit your individualized fueling goals so you can perform your best, feel your best, recover your best, and go from there. So yes, it's very flashy to see your professionals using certain sports nutrition products, but and I know a lot of other great sports dietitians, you know, have the same thought process and approach, that like you can come up with a plan that works best for you, and what that professional athlete is using may not be the best for you, and that's okay.
We also don't, and I think this is really important to remember, we don't know exactly what the pros are really doing. We think we do because they talk about some of what they're doing, and some pros are more transparent about the process than others, but we never fully know what an athlete is actually doing moment to moment, day to day, in terms of their actual training, their actual fueling, their actual recovery. So what we tend to do is make our brains fill in the gaps. We tend to make a lot of assumptions. We think that we know, oh, we know that this athlete uses this sports product and is sponsored by this shoe company. And they live in this, you know, they live in Flagstaff and, because like everybody lives in Flagstaff now. And I know that they train with this group and they posted that they were on this trail run and they ran these splits for that marathon pace workout. I therefore think I know what this athlete is doing. Right. And you actually don't. You actually don't know what they're doing. And I just remember when Nike came out with their Vaporflies, with the first generation of carbon plated shoes. Remember, you had a whole ton of athletes who basically either wore the shoes with tape over the logo or like went unsigned so they could race in Vaporflies and like weren't talking about it. Like, you think you know what your favorite athletes are doing, but you don't. And so we have to remember that when we are looking up to these athletes, just like you don't know really what's going on behind the scenes in anybody else's life, you don't actually know what's going on behind the scenes in theirs. And they may be making decisions about the things that they are doing or not doing that are different from the things they're telling you that they're doing.
Yes, 100%. It's kind of like the comparison is a thief of joy, right? You don't know. And even when it comes to maybe that person you follow on Instagram and like, oh, but they're doing this and they ran this PR and I want that. You don't know. And then it just comes down to each individual is unique in how they work with their coach on their training plan, or they work with a dietitian on their fueling, or what their life schedule is like and what other stress. There's so many things that come into play in the big picture of how someone performs or feels or recovers or, you know, hits those workouts, that I think sometimes it's easy to focus on things like sports nutrition products and like what somebody else is using rather than focus on, you know, things that we all might need to work on as an athlete. Like, full disclosure, I hate threshold work. And I hate it. And
I saw your field test from recently. You did a nice little 30-minute time trial.
It did not go well. It did not go well. And I'm sitting here and I was like, well, I really want to PR my half marathon this year, right? We really want a PR. This is my goal, under 140. My PR is 140.01, and it's been haunting me. I know, haunting me. But I have to have that honest conversation with myself that I hate threshold work. And no gel or shoe is going to change that. That I just need to be honest with my coach and talk to her and be like, yeah, I got to work on this. So sometimes it's easier to focus on, oh, well, maybe it was my shoes, or maybe I should have used a gel with caffeine. And I finally had that. I was like, no, recovery is good. Fueling is good. You know, I'm just mentally, like, a lot of it is mindset work, and I got to be better at that threshold work. So sometimes I think those kind of more superficial things, like what gel you're using, is easier for all of us to focus on versus where we need to dive a little bit deeper, whether it's mindset or how we approach our training or recovery.
I often see athletes trying to figure out how little they can get away with fueling. They're like, oh, but if I choose the slow carb option, I can eat less because I'll have sustained energy for longer, which is just like a pool of buzzwords that we threw into a blender and then came up, you know, with this, that they have been marketed towards, right? Mm-hmm. And this comes from like a bunch of different places. And I'm a woman who lives in the US in the 21st century, right? So I understand the pressures of this weird wellness sphere influence, this whole, you know, this, you know, an aesthetic influence, right? We should be striving to look a certain way. And then I have the performance influence, right? I'm like, oh, but I should be fueling. So, you know, I think it's very common to, in our minds, kind of have like this weird kind of amalgamation of all these beliefs that come from different areas that ends up looking something like, okay, I know I need to fuel, but I think that sugar is bad. But if I eat the slow carbs, I'll have sustained energy so my blood sugar doesn't spike. Mm-hmm. And then we get into these situations where somebody is, you know, being appealed to by a sport nutrition company that promises slow carbs so you can eat fewer of them so you can have lasting energy. You know, so then we're not even eating enough. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, first and foremost, I think what you said, Exactly right. You know, it's going to depend on the person and their preferences and their likes and dislikes and what they tolerate and can't tolerate and all of this. But if you're not getting enough, it doesn't really matter where it's coming from.
Such a great point. Such a great point. Let's say it louder for the people in the back. If you're not getting enough, it doesn't matter where it's coming from. Just sit with that for a second. It's kind of like when I think about the sports nutrition hierarchy. I wrote a newsletter about this a couple weeks ago. It was about creatine supplementation because it's always a hot topic. But basically, if you're not doing the basics, if you're not fueling before your workouts, if you're not hydrated during the day, if you're trying to, like you said, and I think I've done some reels on this where there's no prize for eating as little as possible during your runs or at snacks or at meals. Like some people try so hard to get away with the bare minimum and there is absolutely no award for it. You're only going to dig yourself into a deeper hole by doing the bare minimum. Like where in life has the bare minimum really set anyone up to knock any goals out of the park? I mean, for me, it was always math class. I hated math. No one told me how much math I was going to do as a dietitian, though. That's, you know, it's, I never was the best in math and I never had the best grades in math because I just did the bare minimum to get by. Same with fueling, that fueling before, during, and after. It all adds up. It's all pieces of the bigger puzzle. And again, you can consume lots of great information on the internet at how much you should be fueling. It's no secret. 60 to 90 grams of carbs if we're looking over that 2-hour mark. Honestly, I make most of my athletes, if we're at an hour, you're doing at least 60 grams of carbs. So I don't let people buy because those intra-workout carbs are not only going to help you perform better in that workout, which we're all busy. We're not professionals. This is all something we do for fun. And we're taking time out of our busy lives, whether it's away from family, friends, school, community, work, whatever your other commitments are, why not at least fuel ourselves to show up the best possible way we can for our workouts that we're taking all of this precious time out of our lives for, one. But then it's also going to help you recover better. Those intra-workout carbs help recovery. And while those 60 to 90 grams of carb are important, it's also zooming out and taking that 30,000 foot view. Again, lots of things I do with my one-on-one clients. If you try to do the bare minimum on Monday's recovery run and you have tempo work on Wednesday and you do the don't eat before, bare minimum during, half-ass your recovery afterwards, okay, you're fine on Tuesday, but you're shot for that Wednesday tempo run. What you're doing each day adds up to the bigger picture. And it also is going to impact you further down the line in those workouts. So this is why we fuel before easy runs. This is why I say that hour mark, 60 grams of carbs, boom. Because most runners, you're training, you know, a decent amount throughout the week. We have, as athletes and active individuals, just overall higher needs than the average bear, as I like to say it. Because also, again, most of us are very busy in addition to our workouts, doing other things. So we have a lot of not just energy demands, but also macronutrients, micronutrients, et cetera. Could be a whole nother podcast. I'm sure you already have an episode on it. But when we look at fueling as our workouts is a way to, it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to set ourselves up for success, to stay healthy, right? I have a lot of people come to me with some serious injuries because they've been unbeknownst to them, under fueling, under eating for a very long time. And some people will be like, oh, well, I was fine for like 2 years. I did 2 Ironmans. I did these marathons. Sometimes it takes a very long ass time to show up. This is where everybody's different. You might see your favorite professional athlete lay their flat runner. This is another pet peeve of people doing flat runners and they're running a marathon. They got like 4 gels. And I was like, I hope you're taking some off the course. I eat 4 gels in an hour 45 half marathon. So so it's just looking. That's also the comparison thing. Some things catch up, like under fueling, under eating, under recovery, will catch up with one athlete a lot faster than the other. It's just, you know, that's kind of where the genetics factors come in, how you're training, how you're balancing your training load. And everybody just has different levels of resiliency. So It's hard to do that comparison. Resiliency has kind of been my theme of building it over the last year. So you're not digging yourself in a hole and you can bounce back and come back stronger. I think also too, something I see with a lot of clients is that they'll start fueling their workouts and their runs. And then like one day, like life will happen, right? And they'll forget or they don't have fuel and they'll comment and be like, oh man, I felt so bad. I don't know how I used to do this all the time, right? So, and understand that there's of course a lot of complexities. That's also what I tell a lot of people. Nutrition, simple, but complex. It's one of those things where unlike other, I guess you could say, I don't want to go, what is the word I'm looking for? Like other things, right? Like, if you are struggling with an addiction with alcohol, we'll just use that. You don't need alcohol to survive, right? But if you're struggling with the mental aspect of food and diet culture is telling you carbs are bad and you're saying I should have this low carbohydrate and maybe there's family or societal pressures or economic pressures around how you go about your day-to-day life around nutrition. Nutrition stuff is very deep, deep layers into our childhood, into how we were raised, what we were told, what we hear, what we see. So it runs so much deeper than many other things in our lives, these beliefs we have around nutrition that a lot of people don't realize how much it has impacted them until something turns up and they're like, oh, I have this horrible stress fracture. I had a stress fracture in the neck of my femur, my right hip, when I was, oh man, it was 2011. And it was like my second year running marathons. And I was well underfueled. And it was because I didn't know. I just didn't know any better. And I was kind of given connotations and feedback from people in my life. Oh, you're eating again. Oh, you're eating again. You're eating again. So to me, it created this complex like, okay, like I guess I can't eat because I'm just going to be questioned why I'm having another snack. And then it wound up to this horrible hip fracture and I couldn't run for 10 weeks. And that was my like, boom, boom, boom. Where's all the sports nutrition products I need? Who do I need around me to help support me so I can learn and like not wind up with a horrible bone injury again? And like, knock on wood, I have been healthy since. But it was learning from that big, hard feedback. And just, you know, there wasn't Instagram with all of these great sports dietitians giving out all this great, great information. So
I think it's also hard sometimes to differentiate between, you know, when people are being marketed to, especially people who live in a larger body, right? That they are being marketed to constantly about how to lose weight and weight loss and move more and eat less, you know. And I work with clients of all sizes and plenty of marathoners who, you know, are fueling their body, working with dietitians, right? Fueling their body successfully, right? We're working on their endurance. We're trying to, you know, we're working on improving performance. And they go to the doctor and the doctor says, you need to lose weight. You should try intermittent fasting and I want you to move more. And I'm like, they're already running 40 miles a week. Like, what else do you want them to do? Right? They're supposed to eat less on this. How is that going to help them? So it's not even that sports marketing is necessarily putting weird pressure on certain ways, but it's like how society in general views what they think people should be doing.
Yes, 100%. And this is where I just always plug, doctors are great at being doctors. They are not dietitians. They should not be doling out nutrition advice. They still will. My rheumatologist tried to give me nutrition advice. She also told me to do less. And I was like, okay, well, that's not really helpful. But yeah, there's that pressure. And it's just one of those kind of voices and things that we hear that I hope those who might be in a negative headspace about their body or being in a larger body and they're not comfortable with it and they feel these pressures, that they have positive voices like you and other coaches and other dietitians saying, hey, what you're doing is great. The size of your body, the number on the scale does not define who you are. It is actually the least interesting thing about you. This is what I tell my clients. I don't care. Like, this is the least interesting thing about you. Health is always first. You want to do these extraordinary things. This is awesome, but we need to make sure we're giving your body the resources it needs to function properly, A, just by itself, There's a lot of very energy demanding processes to just be a living human. But then we're going to add in 40 miles of running a week and some strength training. Oh, and don't forget, like, you got to run around and take your kids to practice. And maybe you're taking a night class and you're in grad school. People forget how much mental work has a high energy demand. So this is something I really drive home with my student athletes is that, yeah, like finals week, like that's a big demand on you. And you're also trying to do all of your training. So you better have some big recovery and big nutrition plans set up. So it's all of those factors that, which again, doctors are great at being doctors or other medical professionals or somebody on Facebook who doesn't know what they're talking about. There's so many other demands that at least I know lots of great coaches and dietitians can help you see that, okay, you are a very active human and you need to fuel your body to exist and thrive and be awesome.
Boom. It's not about surviving. It's about thriving.
That's right. Yeah.
So I want to talk about electrolytes in a minute, but first, hold on. I'm going to reach behind me into my crystal vase of sport gels. So I want to talk about how to choose the right one for you in terms of your basic needs. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to pull. So here's the thing. Yeah. We've mentioned a couple brands. We've mentioned a couple brands that I think that we, minimum, I mean, like or find pretty good. I'm also going to mention I use Goo a lot in my training. I have zero sponsorships or affiliations to any sort of sport nutrition product. So, but I like Goo a lot and I use it a lot. But one thing that I want to say specifically, and this is like one of the things where it's like the product can be amazing and work for you, but the marketing can still be weird. So on the back of my Goo, and I'm holding up in front of the camera, it says 5 before every 45 and hydrate along the way. So this product is telling me that I should have one 5 minutes before I start my activity and every 45 minutes during my activity and with hydration. That's not enough for me.
Sure is not.
And I'm like, I want to write to these people and say, you know, you would sell more if you told them to eat more because I can't tell you. And I, you know, and I'm a coach, and I'm not a dietitian, but I do talk with basic nutrition with people on a very regular basis. And they say, well, I'm just following the instructions. I got a box of Goo at my local running store and it said on the Goo or whatever the thing is to take one every 45 minutes. That's what I've been doing. That's not enough.
Not enough. 100% not enough.
So when we are looking, critically evaluating whether a sport nutrition product might be useful for us, what are the key things we should be looking for when we are examining what the properties of this product are?
Yes. So carbohydrates is always where I go first. I want to see how many grams of carbohydrates. Typically, I say over 20 grams of carbohydrate, 20 to 30. Each person is going to be different.
And that's per individual serving.
Per individual serving, yes. 20 to 30, and then I'm looking at sodium because I want to make sure we're getting a decent, like kind of when we spoke about the Morton, I always tell people who want to use Morton, that's fine, works for you, great. We're going to have to come up with a game plan for your salt. And of course, there's sports nutrition products that are salt-only options that we can just work into the plan. I was like, you're just going to have to think a little bit more, carry another thing. It's not the end of the world. And most people are fine with it. But sodium, I like the heavy hitters. But typically, I'm looking for at least 80 milligrams of sodium for thinking about just like all-encompassing for everybody. If you know you're a person with higher sodium needs, your life will be easier if you pick a higher sodium gel. The highest ones I see are right around 240. I think those are the Huma Plus. There might be some I might be missing that might be a touch higher. I use the Huma Plus because I like 240 milligrams of sodium. I don't have to worry too much about getting more sodium. But that's all kind of determined. Your sodium needs will be determined, best determined from doing a sweat test, figuring out what your sweat rate is per hour, and then looking at, okay, sodium losses per hour. You can do at-home tests to do that. Like there's Gatorade patches. I know there's a company called Levelin. There's Precision Hydration. There's even now like the Nix sensor that you can check like your hydration during a workout, wear it. I have not trialed that. I just use quick and dirty equations of assuming I'm losing 1 gram of sodium per liter of sweat loss is kind of what I use. Most people, I typically don't have anyone do under 500 milligrams an hour. Is just a very broad, general, not personal advice, but just if we're thinking in context, like quick and dirty. Of course, heat, humidity, conditions will increase that. If it's a very humid day, you're going to need more sodium. And so that's another big one I look at. And then I usually take a quick look at, oh, what are the ingredients? Not in any sort of fear-mongering kind of way, but I want to see what are my carbohydrate sources and just making sure there's multiple on there, which I was mentioning earlier to Elizabeth that I have not seen a sports nutrition product on the market now that doesn't have two sources of simple carbohydrate in it. So that's usually not a big concern anymore to look
at. And also, I think it's important to remember that, you know, the ingredients list on any product, is like there are a billion different ways to call the same thing sometimes. But I'm just using my example gel, right? It's the one in front of me. And I have the ingredients here, maltodextrin, right? Mm-hmm. That's a carbohydrate. Water, we all know what water is. Fructose, that's a carbohydrate. So I have two separate sources of carbohydrates. We talk about multiple sources of carbohydrates. Somebody asked me this once. They're like, does that mean I have to have two different flavors or two different, like a gel and a chew? I was like, no, it's literally like different molecule types of carbohydrate, multiple sources of carbohydrate.
Yes, great point. Making sure when we're looking at those carbohydrate goals, having those multiple sources means we're using different metabolic pathways, slightly different to break them down. I always think of like the traffic jam, right? We got one source. It's like one expressway into the city. You're going to be able to take in less and then things are going to get jammed up. We have 2 to 3 sources. We have multiple expressways into the city and traffic and or carbohydrates are going to work their way through the system a little bit better. So I look at that. And then my one big where I'm real stingy in my gels is if there's artificial sweeteners in gels. That to me is a hard stop on sports nutrition products. I know some dietitians may not be as stingy, but I'm pretty stingy. So looking for things like stevia, erythritol, there are different extracts of stevia that you might see in a different way. But usually it's will be, if they're doing a different form of it, they'll list it as stevia, like in parentheses. Monk fruit extract, did I already say that? I don't know if I did, but I just want to reiterate. Those are the big artificial sweeteners I see and use in some sport gels. Other artificial sweeteners could be oleofructose, isomalt, saccharin, xylitol, molitol, aspartame, sucralose. I know a lot of funny words.
Allulose is a newer one.
Yep, that's definitely a newer one. I know I have seen a gel that uses it. And basically why I'm stingy about this is goes back to that whole log. Like we almost spent an hour talking about how important sugar is during workouts. It's your body's preferred source of fuel. We don't want a sugar substitute, right? That defeats the purpose. Even if it's when I see it in gels, they have it in addition to carbohydrate, but we don't need it in our gels. We don't want it there. It's not doing us anything good. It also, in some people are more sensitive to artificial sweeteners and sensitive in potential for GI upset. So that's the last thing we want when we're running, right? So you want to avoid that. And just overall, you know, again, I don't like to demonize or fear monger anything, but artificial sweeteners are compounds that are showing up just a lot more frequently in a lot of foods like yogurt. I saw it a lot in recently when I was looking at the grocery store yogurts, different yogurts. And it's just something that we want to make sure we're just not overdoing it when it comes to the artificial sweeteners in our lives.
I think it's interesting. I've noticed this more on products that are trying to kind of do that crossover into being a mainstream product that isn't marketed specifically towards endurance athletes, is that those products tend to be more likely to contain artificial sweeteners, right? Because it's one thing to target our endurance athletic community, you know, But we're pretty big spenders, right? Ask anybody how much a race costs these days, and we willingly shell out for that, and the shoes, and the travel, and all that, right? but we're still a relatively small segment of the population, right? So if you are a sports marketer and you are taking your niche product and wondering how you can get everybody else to buy it, right? What are the trends? We talk about, marketing is trendy, what goes with cultural trends. And right now we are taking the sugar out of a lot of things. And we're not here to comment on the role of sugar in the standard American diet. We're specifically talking about why endurance athletes need it. But if you are using a product that is marketed towards people in general and not specifically towards the endurance athletic community, it may contain things that are not going to be helpful for you as an athlete.
100%. And that's where, like, the lines get crossed real easy. And I think sometimes if that's what a runner is consuming in the marketing, is that is perpetuating and continuing to create these fears, because they're kind of going for the whole wellness fitfluencer field, which in some aspects they do also exercise a lot, so they should be taking in carbohydrates. But again, that's another that's another story for another day. So again, like, none of it is ever really to fault anyone, because again, like you said, this is what they get paid to do. They're marketers, right? Preying on our fears.
We'll talk about electrolyte products. I've seen a couple, and actually I want to talk about where this is coming. I was recently in London and I was on the tube, and it's like the subway, you got ads, right? And I looked up, and there is this ad for an iron supplement. Mm-hmm. And the marketing accompanying this advertisement for an iron supplement promised to boost your energy. And I thought, well, that's a complicated path from A to B. And I was surprised, to be honest with you, I was surprised that they could even get away with making that claim. But I think there is a similar way that electrolytes are marketed to us, especially here in the States, that their electrolytes will provide you energy, or mm-hmm. caffeine products will provide you energy. And I view those claims kind of in the same bucket as the iron supplement will provide me energy. Like, I technically know what you're trying to say, but the way you're saying it is actually false.
Yes.
And that's a really funky place to be.
Like, I see where you're going, but also, yes, 100%. I mean, that at like the end of the day, I know this isn't electrolyte beverages in particular, but like pre-workouts, right? For energy, caffeine for energy. Yes, those will give you energy, but like most of the time you just need actual energy. Like calories to take in to get energy. Like that will make you feel better for the most part. I always tell my clients that, right? You feel that afternoon energy slump? When was the last time you ate? Have a snack. Oh, do you feel better most of the time? Yes, because you gave your body energy. I mean, sometimes that's even a thought process I have. But going to the electrolyte marketing of these products, I am thinking one off the top of my head, paleo, gluten-free, keto-friendly. I'm like, ugh, cringe. Well, these products, the marketing really don't love it because it's so preying. That being said, can people benefit from electrolytes? Absolutely. Can people also benefit probably from just like drinking more water and liquids in their day and not running around dehydrated? Absolutely. So it's kind of one of those critical thinking things. Okay, is it the electrolytes making you feel better? Maybe it is. Maybe you do need to focus on electrolyte replacement. Or are you now just drinking more water and more fluids because you have electrolytes in them and it has a little bit of flavor, and it's kind of one of those things, is it the chicken or the egg, right? You don't know exactly which is making you feel better. For people who are sweating regularly, of course, adding some electrolytes in is going to be beneficial. But this is also why we have sports nutrition products that we take during our workouts. That being said, you still will likely need to replace some electrolytes after, but it always doesn't have to be from some fancy drink. I always think of milk. I'm a big milk fan. Come at me. Love dairy. I know not everybody tolerates it, but you can get lots of electrolytes naturally occurring in some great milk, use chocolate milk, part of your recovery drink. You're just like full circle right there. For my saltier sweaters or heavier sweaters during like the summer months, maybe some electrolytes during the day, like liquid IV is one I have a lot of people use. Noon's another one. Yeah, that can be beneficial, but no one thing is going to absolutely change your life. And if you're a runner, salt your food. And yeah. 95% of the situation, salt your food.
Say my favorite electrolyte replacement. So I use high sodium gels because they're so convenient, right? Most of the time, you know, salted lime goo. Oh God, it's an absolute godsend. But I also use salt sit caps in runs, right? But they're expensive. You know what else is a great source of salt? Salt.
Little salt
the
packets.
Salt you find in your kitchen. And guess what? It is dirt cheap, right? So you do not necessarily have to spend $3 a sachet on fancy salt products when you can buy a pound of salt for like $2 and it'll last you for 10 years. Obviously, don't go overboard. Don't go tablespoons, right? But it is the best source, right? And yeah, you can get fancy with it. You can get like, you know, the real salt with the, I don't know, whatever minerals like it, or you can use the salt that you currently have. But yeah, if you are looking for a cost-effective way to add electrolytes into your daily diet, you already have it in your kitchen.
Yeah, 100%. That reminds me, one time I was on a like 19-mile run and I forgot my salt that I just like ran to a gas station and took the salt packets. It was so humid and I was so desperate. I was like, give me your salt packets. I'll give you money. That's what I thought of. And also incorporating.
Trying to pay him.
Right? I was like, he was like, just take them. Like, and get out of my store.
Get out of my store, you crazy woman.
You're insane. But yeah, it's as simple as that. Adding a little salt to your foods, salty snacks, pretzels, salty trail mix. Hydrating foods too. You know, there are certain foods that contain more water. Thinking cucumbers, it's almost summer, it's watermelon season, your melon's gonna have more. So it doesn't have to be fancy, complicated, really expensive packets of electrolytes to be replaced. A lot of times I'm just using a scoop of the sports drink I use. Like a scratch, scoop of scratch. That's what I use. If you like Tailwind, use that. If you like whatever floats your boat for your sports drink, if you are training for a half marathon, marathon, 10K, you're running over 20 miles a week, a scoop of scratch here and there during the day is not going to be the end of the world. It's probably going to make you feel better to get some of those electrolytes on board. So you don't have to really be alarmed with this, you know, keto, paleo, yada, yada nonsense when it comes to electrolytes. Again, simple. Don't overcomplicate it.
And lastly, I know we said we touch on those kind of those extra type things that one can find to supplement what you may or may not already be doing. You mentioned creatine. I know there's a whole wealth of research that supports how beneficial supplementing creatine can be for endurance athletes, not just for people who are, you know, power lifters. But there are a whole bunch of other, shall we say, products of more dubious claim out there in the order of like, this would be a beneficial thing to spend your money on, all the way to please don't buy this. You were just set your money on fire instead. Talk about some of the things that you regularly hear from your clients when they bring up those types of products and what you would recommend.
Yeah, that's a great, great question. Most of my one-on-one clients know what my answer will be. But typically I start with, no, you're not eating enough and we're not getting enough protein. So we're not talking about creatine. We're not talking about this. Maybe someone brings a pre-workout drink to me. And I say, okay, but maybe if you ate more energy, calories, more fuel, you don't need this pre-workout. If you need pre-workout to get up and absolutely do your workout, to have the energy to do it, maybe we need to talk about rest. Maybe we need to look and say, are you too fatigued? Are you too depleted? That we need to revisit that with your coach and we need to look at your training schedule. If people need a little bit of pick me up before workout, I usually just tell them to have a little coffee or a tea, right? A little caffeine, nothing crazy. But if it's something you consistently need, it's kind of just like when I talk about just coffee or caffeine in general with anyone or any client, it's like, okay, is like, what's the relationship with it? Are you 100% dependent on it? This is a red flag. Like, boom, we need to revisit this. Other things that people ask me about, protein powders. I usually am pretty on board as long as we're looking at a quality third-party tested product as a tool in the toolkit, right? If we're relying on it for half of our protein intake during the day, that's where we're going to revisit the basics. But usually protein powder, I'm pretty on board with, again, as long as it's a solid product, because it's, again, it can be helpful. We're in a pinch. Let me get some extra protein in. Boom. Put it in a smoothie, mix it with some chocolate milk, however the person wants to take it, mix it in their oatmeal. It can be a really useful tool. So I would say that's one of the biggest ones. Collagen, I hear about that a lot, but I typically only use collagen if we're dealing with some sort of tendon or ligament injury, and using it before workouts if we're dealing with one of those injuries in particular, rehabbing back, coming back from it, or if we have a history of those injuries. The thing with collagen is there's a lot of research around it, but all of the claims, and I look particularly in the strength, use around strength and resistance training, joint, tendon, ligament health, it's all of the results are, it may help, right? So it might help, but we can't be 100% sure. So that's why I usually use it in injury protocols. I love tart cherry juice.
One of the less glamorous ones. About collagen. Yes. I think one of the misconceptions about collagen is that it is a protein supplement.
It is not, yes. But it is a common misconception. It's not a complete protein. Thank you for bringing that point up, because yes, usually when I lead in with people, like, okay, this is actually, somebody just asked me about a protein kombucha drink, and she's like, what do you think? And I was like, all of the protein, 15 grams of protein is coming from collagen. That's not a complete protein. Don't waste your money. Right. And then there was artificial sweeteners, and I was like,
and kombucha? Ah, no. Gotta get that good ferment on.
Right. We need all those good gut buggies. Anyways. So that's usually my stance on collagen. Tart cherry juice, I love to use, with people. I guess you couldn't, it's not technically a supplement. I'm sure you could probably buy it in a pill form, but I think when we're looking at fine tuning, like kind of looking at that hierarchy, okay, we're getting adequate energy, we're fueling our workouts, we're eating enough carbohydrate and protein after our workouts. What's something else we can kind of add in? Tart cherry juice is another one I have people consider. It has been shown to have anti-inflammatory properties. For some of my poor sleepers, it could potentially help increase natural melatonin production, and can help some of the poor sleepers. But at the end of the day, it's an antioxidant-rich juice that if people find it helps them recover a little bit better after hard efforts, we incorporate that in, or if they're in an injury protocol. So those are some of the top things. I'm sure there's more. People ask me about branched chain amino acids. I'm typically going back to, are you eating enough protein? The answer is usually no.
The interesting thing about branched chain amino acids, there's some really interesting stuff about when you supplement with branched chain amino acids in session as intra workout, there may be some research that helps reduce perceived exertion.
Yep.
But that is entirely separate from, I'm going to take a bunch of branched chain amino acids because I think it's going to make my biceps bulgy. It doesn't matter how many branched chain amino acids that you supplement with if you're not eating enough protein, because the whole muscle growy benefits are from the complete protein, not the branched chain amino acids.
Exactly. Yep. And typically, if there is someone who's eating enough protein, eating enough overall energy, kind of getting the rest of those necessities checked off the list, like during workout, post-workout, that could be something where some people, it's like, okay, is this third party tested? How are we taking it? How much are you spending on it? I would rather most people eat real food, because you can get these from food. that if they want to try it and they notice a difference, great. If they don't, but you got to check all those other boxes for me on that one first. Of course, in like ultra endurance events, once in a while I've had to use branched chain amino acids in ultra endurance events, because it can be beneficial in those very, very long events. That would be kind of like one of those outliers. But otherwise, like I said, you got to check all those other boxes.
Essentially, that's like essentially to prevent extreme catabolism, right?
Oh, yeah. 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 So your body can fully break down.
Right? Like, please don't take what we have. This isn't about growing anything. This is like, please leave the muscles that we have alone. Please don't eat them for fuel.
Exactly. Basically. Yes. That's one of the outliers, right? Lots of nuances in sports nutrition, people.
All right. So if we were to sum up this conversation, which I honestly feel like we could probably just keep going because why not? Because this is fun. Think critically about who is pitching something to you, why they're making this claim, and if what they're saying backs up with what you have heard from credentialed, experienced sports dietitians or other master's level or higher nutrition professionals, and if it makes sense to you, right? So, like, I think this is really tough too, because, like, our brains love novelty, and I'm not gonna lie, we're all very lazy. The human brain literally developed to be lazy, to take shortcuts, to, like, to find the easiest way to do something, right? Think about who we are as a species, right? We get to kind of sit down and do nothing most days if we really wanted to. No other species on the planet is really like that. That if somebody is, if you come across a targeted ad in your Instagram feed or on Facebook or on TikTok or wherever, and somebody's making a claim to you that sounds too good to be true, take a real hard look at that claim. Think critically. Reach out to somebody whose opinion you respect about whether there's any validity behind what this claim is. Don't just hand over your money looking for that perfect quick fix.
100%. Nailed it. Couldn't agree more.
And also eat more carbs.
the answer is always carbs. I should have worn my Queen of Carb shirt today.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. This is absolutely fabulous. I hope that we get to talk again on a future episode, but tell us what you are up to. And if people are interested and they are like, oh my God, she knows exactly what she's talking about, I gotta tap her brain and work with her, what are you offering these days?
Yeah, thanks so much. I hope to come back again. Glad to be here always. So one-on-one coaching is always available. If you want like the highest level of support, we're in it together, deep dive. We're going deep into all of it, the feelings, the food, the fueling, and your girl. Also launching soon, probably by the time this podcast is live, I am offering a membership option for people who are like, yeah, I want to tap into her, but you know, I'm balling on a budget, right? I can't invest the time, the money full on into one-on-one coaching, but I still want a little bit of access to Stevie to ask questions, but you also like community. So it is going to be called the Keep It Real Collaborative, because if you haven't noticed, I really like to keep it real. So this is going to involve space where you can have your questions answered, but also get community support from like-minded athletes, one-on-one clients I've worked with. You can all bounce ideas off each other and myself, ask all of your questions. You'll also get some access to masterclasses where you can learn a little bit more, kind of honed in topics. And my next masterclass in June is going to be all about ignoring your thermostat. So we're going to dive into some thyroid stuff, baby. Yes.
That's cool. So,
learning how to get the resources that support your most basic functions, and then all of the awesome stuff we want to do on top. I just really struggled with some thyroid stuff myself, so I am excited to dive into that. So that's going to be June 20th. But if you want to join the Keep It Real Collaborative or just join the masterclass, you can do that all separately. Learn more about one-on-one, me, my dog. You can follow me on Instagram at Stevie Linlin, or you can head to my website at stevielinrd.com.
And that'll be linked below in the show notes. If you're not following Stevie, you totally should. She's also awesome in real life. And if you haven't listened to the episode we did back in season two, you should, because she talks about, like, I don't know, working with Shalane Flanagan, which is pretty awesome. Thank you so much for being here. This is great.
Yeah. Thanks again.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Don't forget, you can always find and follow me on Instagram at Running Explained. And if you're looking for a coach or a training plan, check me out. Visit my website, runningexplained.co. That's runningexplained.co. See you next time. This content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you have regarding a medical condition.